Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. From the newsroom in New York, we're ready now to call in our correspondents all over the world with direct reports on latest developments. For a summary of all important news up to the moment, we take you first to the newsroom in Washington.
A spectacular domestic tragedy has drawn the nation's attention from the war news this morning. More than 400 persons, the latest official count is 408, lost their lives early this morning in a fire that flashed through a Boston nightclub. More than 1,000 patrons, many of them celebrating yesterday's Holy Cross football victory over Boston College, were packed into the Coconut Grove when a rush of flame sent the panic-stricken mob toward fire exits. Some were literally thrown downstairs by the pressure of those behind them. Others leaped to safety from the roof of the club to the tops of parked automobiles. But hundreds were trapped and died, some by flame, others under the crushing force of terrified men and women. This morning, Boston has sent a call for blood plasma to treat hundreds of injured packed in the city's hospitals. On the war front, Russia's embattled armies continue to gain. Moscow announces that Soviet troops are pressing their surprise offensive west of the Russian capital. An official communique reports widening breaches in the German lines in the face of bitter enemy resistance. The midday communique doesn't disclose the depth of the Russian penetration, but it indicates that the Red Army is pushing steadily on toward the border of Old Latvia. An earlier communique has told of a Russian breakthrough near Veliki Luki, which is 280 miles west of Moscow and only 90 miles from the Latvian frontier. Meanwhile, fighting still continues on the Stalingrad front. There, the Russians report they've hurled back a Nazi attack in the city itself, killing more than 400 of the enemy and downing 64 German planes. And from London, we hear of a new RAF attack on the Italian city of Turin. Turin is one of Italy's great industrial centers. An Air Ministry communique speaks of excellent flying weather and good results in the attack on the Arsenal city. Across the Mediterranean, both the Allies and the Axis seem to be squaring off for the showdown in Tunisia. The Germans and Italians have lost the offensive, and American and British troops, now less than 15 miles from Bizerta at one point, are getting ready for the final push. The British report a bombing raid on Bizerta, the Tunisian port being used by the Germans in reinforcing their North African front. Cairo tells us this morning that the Allied medium bombers attacked an airfield at Marble Arch, which is 40 miles west of El Agheila in the Libyan desert. That's the point where Marshal Rommel is expected to make his final stand. Large fires were started, the British say. And that's all from Washington.
And now to the Southwest Pacific. This report comes by way of San Francisco.
Not in 10 seconds. 10 seconds from now, sister.
Go ahead, Mr.
Paulson.
This is George Thomas Foster speaking from Australia. Last Sunday, it was reported that the Japs had succeeded in landing reinforcements on the Boonagoona beachhead. Bad weather once again was the enemy's ally. Under cover of rain squalls and taking advantage of low-hanging clouds, he hid his operations from our reconnaissance planes and bombardiers. All week long, stories coming through from the New Guinea-Papuan area tells of increasingly bad weather in that region. The thoroughly bad season sets in just about now, the 1st of December. From now on, it will really be tough going. Streams will suddenly appear where a few hours before, perfectly dry going was possible. There'll be torrents, too, rushing with the speed of an express train. Deep, impossible to wade, they'll come swirling down thousands of feet of tropical mountainside. Those wastes, deep swamps our boys are flossing through on their way to Boona will become, overnight, impassable lakes, and it will rain all day and all night. But you will say, sure, the Nits will have to put up with the same weather, too. What is bad weather for us must be bad weather for them as well. That's all quite true, but with this very important difference. We must go forward, regardless of the weather, while the Nits, for the most part now, sits behind his barricade at Boona, or uses the weather to sneak in reinforcements. We must ford those unwadable streams, cross those impassable lakes, knock the Japs out of swamp-guarded Boona. We must continue to fly our supplies from Fort Moresby. Our transports must climb up and through the thunder cap over the towering jungle peaks of the Owen Stanley Range to Kokoda. We must ferret out other and more secret landing strips in order to supply our troops, now inching their way along the northeastern coast of Papua. The reinforced and entrenched enemy land forces are putting up a desperate fight, but have managed to launch counterattacks, strong enough to be described as hostile, by the way. However, in each case, We have been able to repulse these efforts. And now today's latest reports repeat that the enemy naval forces are still maneuvering off the coast. Our bombers must go out after them, weather or no weather. They must prevent reinforcements of the Nip's garrison at Bunas and his strongholds that lay in Salamau further up the coast. That's how adverse weather conditions can help the enemy and hinder our side in the present situation. In fact, the weather may be our worst enemy in the next few weeks. It can so slow down our schedule that it can very well upset our slogan, Bunas, by Christmas. This is George Thomas Folster. I now return you to San Francisco.
Back now to the newsroom in New York.
And now to Moscow and Robert Magidoff.
The Red Army offensive on the Central Front is the third in the series of blows aiming to wrest the initiative from the enemy along the entire Soviet-German front. It is difficult to point to where the Russians will strike next, but strike they will. What the Germans have had to deal with until now are only blossoms, said today's Red Star, and added, the cherries will ripen soon. This blossom time, which is 10 days old now, has brought death to almost 100,000 Axis troops and imprisonment to about two-thirds as many. And the Russian offensive at both Stalingrad and on the Central Front is continuing in full force, especially on the Central Front, where strong Soviet reinforcements are pouring into the four gaps that have been cut through the German lines with the aid of the giant Voroshilov tanks. Simultaneously, the Germans are experiencing great difficulties in bringing up their reserves because of the cutting of vital communications, including three railway lines. One of them, by the way, runs between Velikiye Luki and Neville, and it's here where the Red Army is closest to the Latvian border. Rzhev, that formidable German-held stronghold with its triple ring of fortifications, has now lost its last contact by rail with the German rear, but the Russians have yet to cut some highways before Rzhev is completely encircled. The Red Army made their painstaking preparations for their offensive on the Central Front. Under the protection of most skillful camouflage, the Russians dug wide trenches right up to the German lines and then placed their machine guns and cannon within a few yards of the German sentries. The guns hauled up from the rear were mounted on sledges, and the artillery horses trod noiselessly on the hoof pads. All these details, however, failed to give a complete picture of the situation at the battlefront. The Russian press deliberately withholds information so as not to allow any leak that might be useful to the enemy. The same holds true also for Stalingrad, where the Red Army is tightening its deadly ring around the Germans and Romanians who have been cut off completely and are receiving their food and ammunition only by air. Goodbye from Moscow.
Now across the Atlantic for the latest developments in Britain. Go ahead, Edward Deuce in London.
This is London. Sunday quiet reigns in North Africa, at least so far as any official announcement is concerned. But the scarcity of any reliable official news is interpreted to mean that great events are impending. That is what an official commentator broadcasting from Rome seemed to imply in a Sunday sermon to the Italian people. The commentator told his hearers that we Italian people know how to look death in the face, but our hearts are firm as always in the country's supreme hour. His appeal for courage came 6 hours after another heavy RAF raid on Turin. The Air Ministry in London announced that a heavy and concentrated attack was made last night on war industries in Turin. Only one bomber is missing from this, the first raid on Italy since November 20th. Aircraft of Fighter Command shot up locomotives and goods trains in northern France and Belgium. One fighter failed to return. A communique from Middle East headquarters issued in London stated that there was nothing to report from British land or air forces in the Libyan desert yesterday. There was, however, terrifically heavy offensive air activity the night before. Several noteworthy and rather curious political developments have taken place. The Vichy radio threw down the whole great story of heroism at Toulon. The official Vichy news agency stated that the reporter responsible for putting out the tale of heroic resistance of the naval commanders will be arrested for spreading false news. The story of admirals and captains going down to their doom with their ships is branded as completely untrue. So is the story of the great devastation and sabotage. In the whole fortified area of the naval base, the Vichy radio claimed, only two people were killed and 27 injured. The motive for this correction can only be guessed at. But it is surmised that the Germans are now firmly in control of that hitherto impartial source of news. The second curious incident occurred in West Africa. The British-controlled radio at Accra on the Gold Coast announced that it had been listening carefully to the Dakar radio for the past few days. It is noteworthy that though expressions of loyalty to the Allied cause and to Governor General Brosson were frequent, there was never a single mention of Darlan. Nor was there any indication that Brosson acknowledged the leadership of Darlan. The Governor General of Senegal has now affirmed his allegiance to Brosson. He is the last of the French colonial governors to do so. The others were the governors of Togo, Niger, and French Guinea. And now for the news from Libya, from Grant Parr in Cairo.
Hello, New York. This is Grant Parr speaking from Cairo, Egypt. Rain, cold, and wind continued yesterday to harass the fighting forces of both sides from Tunisia to Marsmatru. The ordinary chill, damp winter climate of the North African coast seems compounded this year with more rain, more cold, more wind. But that may be imagination. During General Wavell's offensive, the weather was so bad, many veterans recalled the mud of Flanders in the First World War and advanced the theory that heavy guns bring rain. But without denying the natural origin of the North African downpours, all experts admit that they have slowed the war. And just at this moment, the slower the war goes, the better the Germans like it. But for the past few days, there have been signs that the Allied air forces would not be denied, no matter what the weather. They have resumed their attacks on enemy landing grounds near the front and their raids on key bases of the Axis air forces throughout the Mediterranean. At Marble Arch, 40 miles behind the Agila front, the Germans have undoubtedly concentrated numerous fighters to protect the Agila positions of the Africa Corps, to strafe the 8th Army, and to escort their Stukas. For a time, the weather protected these Luftwaffe concentrations and provided only the minor compensation of keeping the enemy planes grounded, too. But now the Allied planes are flying whenever the skies clear even slightly. The night before last, our medium bombers attacked these dispersed aircraft at Marble Arch, starting a large fire. After a few more such raids, Rommel's fighter protection will probably be just about what it was at Alamein. Other British bombers attacked Bizerta on the same night, causing large fires and explosions. Twin engine fighters shot down two ancient Savoia bombers and an equally ancient Fiat fighter in the Strait south of Sicily. Fighters also raided their Wolfia aerodrome in Tripolitania, setting afire a dump and a large transport plane. Our fighter bombers raided Gela Aerodrome in Sicily. Air Chief Marshal Sir Arthur Tedder and Major General Lewis Brereton are back in the Middle East after conferring in Northwest Africa with General Eisenhower and other important Allied officers there. It seems fair to assume that from now on there will be close liaison between the two commands. The Middle East Air Chiefs were, of course, flown to and from the conference, which lasted 2 days. For some time, the Middle East Air Forces have supported the Western Allies by bombing and strafing enemy airdromes in Tunisia and Sicily. But this was the first direct contact between the East and the West.
You have been listening to the latest news reported direct by our correspondents all over the world. We heard this morning from Washington, Australia, Moscow, London, and Cairo. For the latest news, keep tuned to this station. This is the National Broadcasting Company.